Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
In August 2014, 46-year-old Karen McCabe died of a blood clot 9 days after a routine operation to remove varicose veins. Last week, her family, husband Michael and daughter Shauna, and her two sons settled their action against two hospitals and a hospital consultant. And Shauna joins me now. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Shauna.
Thank you for having me on, Claire.
Now, I mentioned that this happened back in 2014, just 8 years ago. You had only turned 13 at that time, is that right?
Yeah, so I had only turned 13 and my two younger brothers were 7 and 9. So they were all very much very young.
Very young. Will you tell me a little bit about your mother, about Karen?
Yeah, so I suppose we were, you know, lucky enough that we had our kind of childhood with my mom, and, you know, she was in good health. Like, she wasn't sick. So overall, I guess my mom was really mad, is what people would describe her as. She definitely was full of life. You know, like my dad always says, there was just so much life in her. You know, she really just lived to have fun and to laugh. And she had so much love to give everyone. She was so caring, you know. Mm-hmm. She kind of dedicated her life to looking after us and my granny. She was so supportive of my dad and his company. And, you know, she just really, I suppose, lived to have fun and just look after people.
And your statement, which was read out in court, you said that your family and your lives changed forever.
Oh, completely. You know, like, my mom really was the foundation of our lives. You know, my dad always says that when she had three of us, like, her life was complete. It was all that she wanted and it was all she ever asked for. So my mom had a very successful career before she had us, but once we were born, she stopped working, and she kind of dedicated her life to looking after us and, you know, to staying home and bringing us up and, you know, to making sure that we got the best education that we could. And, you know, she supported my dad with his company, but I suppose she was the main caregiver at home. She was the foundation of everything.
There was a great love, as I understand from what I saw and what you've said and what your dad said, a great love between them, between your dad and your mum.
Yeah, so my parents had been together for 32 years. They met when they were quite young, you know, and I suppose it just kind of took off from there. You know, they bought their first house together. You know, my mom supported my dad in everything that they did, you know, and they were a great team. My mom was home-minding us and supporting my dad with his business. Now, my dad definitely got off lightly beforehand. You know, he wouldn't have done much at home, but it was a great team that they had. You know, it was a great dynamic, and it worked for us. And overall, just our family was kind of the centre of everything for us.
Well, let's talk a bit about what happened. As I said there at the beginning, Shauna, this was a routine operation, wasn't it?
It was. So it was an operation to remove varicose veins, which I'm sure as many people know is a general thing that happens. It's more of a cosmetic surgery. It's not because of any illness or sickness. So it is a routine operation. So my mom had the operation on the 6th of August, 2014. And the operation went well. Everything went smoothly. The consultant was happy with us, and she was discharged the same day. And she came home, and she was in good spirits. You know, and she was fine, other than, you know, a few stitches on her leg and a bandage. She was her normal self. Everything went well.
But then a week later, she went back to the hospital, and it was the Bon Secours Hospital in Glasnevin in Dublin where she'd had the operation. She went back there, didn't she, because she was having some pain?
Yeah, so I suppose a few days afterwards, I'd say about 4 days, my mum started to get excruciating pain in her leg, kind of around her knee area and the back of her knee. My two younger brothers and I were at home with her. My dad had returned to work. And we were just in the house, and it was during the summer, and I suppose we really noticed that something was wrong, you know, something had deteriorated. Like, I remember standing in the kitchen with my mom, and she was bending over the countertop, holding on, screaming, and throwing up, and she just was not well. She couldn't put any weight on her leg whatsoever. So she, on the 12th actually, so that was the following Tuesday, she called up the volunteer first. She explained to the nurse on the phone that something wasn't right. You know, she was in a lot of pain. She wasn't quite sure what had happened, what was going wrong, but she needed help. The nurse suggested that we went on a short walk just to try, you know, get the blood moving, and that might help. So we actually walked around to a local shop. It's only about a kilometre away. And, you know, I was only 13 and the boys were only 7 and 9, but we actually got stuck in the car park in the shop because my mum couldn't move. She was in so much pain. And she stood in the car park screaming. And I remember kind of standing there and I was like, stop screaming, people are looking, this is so embarrassing. But she genuinely was in so much pain. You know, my mum would have been very tough, like she would never have showed her pain towards us or anything. You know, she kind of sheltered us from everything. So it was very unusual, you know, and I called my dad immediately to come home. And, you know, I was very distressed on the phone. I thought something's not right. So the next day, my dad decided that, you know, we had to go back into Boxers. So my granny had come out that day to, you know, help around the house and look after us. So I actually was left in the Boxers hospital that evening with my mum while my dad and brother dropped my granny home. But this is definitely a day that, you know, I still haven't gotten over it. And I hold a lot of guilt around this day. And, you know, the Wednesday in the box series is very distressing for me. You know, I suppose I was the only person there with my mom. So this is kind of where the issue started, because basically the box series couldn't help my mom that day. This really was the beginning of it.
So, but just so to let people know, it was said in court that the consultant who had performed the operation, Professor Austin Leahy, he was on holiday at the time. He couldn't be contacted. Yes. And then we have this problem with the hospital protocols at the time, because yes, they couldn't contact any other consultants at the time. Is that right, Shona?
It is. So the policy back then was that any doctor or nurse had to contact the primary consultant to readmit a patient. Dr. Austin Leahy was away, and, you know, there was just this big, huge blur of no policy in place, really. It wasn't a plan that was actionable. So the doctor, on the ward that evening, he did want to admit it, but he didn't have the authority to do so.
So even though that junior doctor wanted to admit your mother for tests,
yeah,
and further examination, the protocols in place at the time didn't allow a non-consultant doctor to do that?
No. There was nothing there supporting the junior doctor. He was at a kind of lost cause.
So like even the alternative, which you might automatically think of, you know, to text the doctor, the consultant, that wasn't there. The system didn't provide that option to the staff. So your mum wasn't admitted at that time, and was she sent home?
Yeah, so the doctor returned and he just said, you know, there's nothing that I can do. So you have to leave. So, you know, my mum was very distressed and in pain, and I, you know, kind of physically carried her body weight out of the hospital. You know, and it's a guilt that's kind of stayed with me, because, I mean, we've gotten countless expert medical reports since then, you know, trying to figure out where the mistakes lay and where they came from. You know, and the doctors have said that if my mum had been admitted to hospital that evening, she would still be here. You know, she would have survived. Mm.
It's just heartbreaking to hear you say that you're carrying all of this guilt, because I'm listening to you now as a young woman, but at the time you were 13, you were a child.
I know, but why did I take the responsibility of actually carrying my mum out? Like, my mum couldn't walk. And I suppose I was only 13, like, I just wanted to get my mum to my dad, you know, and kind of say, I don't know what to do, like, help. Like, we don't know what to do. He said he can't help. You know, but if I had stayed there that night, mm-hmm, you know, she would be here.
What's the impact on you now? Like, how does that guilt that you talk about manifest? I mean, you talked about nightmares. You still have those, do you?
Oh, every night. Yeah, do you know what? I suppose from the actual week itself and from seeing my mum in so much pain and from being in the hospital and having to carry her out and being very present with it, I've nightmares about that, you know, because I feel a huge amount of guilt around that because I was responsible in one way. You know, I was there to help her and I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure so many people have said to you, Shona, that it's not your fault, you know.
No, I know that. I know, but I think because no one has taken responsibility, that responsibility has to fall on someone. You know, like I have nightmares that I'm in the box cures up on the lift and I can see the doctor and the nurses that were on the ward that night, but we're stuck in the lift and no one will help us because that's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it was. You know, we needed help. And clearly something was very wrong, but no one would help.
Just to go back to what happened then, you left the hospital, but clearly your mother was very sick and she went to Beaumont Hospital.
We came home that evening. It was actually quite late. You know, I don't think that my parents really knew what to do. They were kind of told there's nothing that we can do. So we went home that evening and then the next day my dad brought my mum to Beaumont Hospital to A&E. And my brothers and me went over to my granny's to stay. My dad had called the bond secure earlier that day, you know, kind of not angry, but really lost, you know, and we need to do something here, really worried about my mum. So my dad brought my mum into Beaumont. You know, the nurses kind of said to my dad, you know, go home, get some rest. She's been admitted now, you know. So my dad returned home and then the next morning at about 9 a.m. he got a call saying that my mum had lost consciousness and they were working on it trying to save her. And that he should come in as soon as possible. So my dad drove in and she was gone. And we just couldn't understand what had happened.
So he wasn't with her, and clearly you and your brothers, you weren't there when she died.
No, we weren't, no. I mean, I think we all thought, you know, this is okay. Like, she's in hospital, she's been admitted, she's okay. The operation went well. You know, there's something small wrong, but she's in the best place possible. She's safe when she's there. You know, we got her in. And I think, you know, we just went into utter shock. Because it just, even now, like, how does that happen, you know? My dad then came to my granny's house and the boys and me were outside the back garden playing and we were on the trampoline and we could see my dad walking in the front door. And I just remember Callum, like he was only 7, Callum shouted, you know, "Mammy's home," and jumped off the trampoline. And my dad just fell in the door in his hands and knees.
Oh, my God.
And then everyone just broke down, you know, my poor granny. You know, I remember that whole entire day, no one actually said that she's gone, she's dead. You know, so later that day, I went with my dad into the hospital to see her. But I remember the whole drive in, kind of sitting in the car thinking, I was like, well, no one's actually said that she's gone, you know, so maybe she's just sick. You know, maybe she's just not well. But just, we were in such shock that we just, it would not register. And especially, you know, after trying to get someone to help, you just, you believe that it's going to be okay because she's in the hospital, she's safe, you know, they can help her. So it just would not register with us that the operation went well and she was in the best place possible with all this help around her. And still, she somehow wasn't coming home.
Do you remember any of it? Do you remember the funeral, all of those events?
No, I don't. You know, I remember going to Beaumont and kind of walking in and thinking that she would be sitting there unwell, but that she would be there. And I just remember walking in and her just lying there, dead and cold. But after that, I don't remember anything. No. And the two younger boys, they don't remember anything at all. You know, and that's been a huge challenge that we've had to face. And a huge part of it today just are finding difficult to live with. You know, Callum always says,
Yeah, go ahead. It's just so traumatic listening to you, listening to how you dealt with this as a child and your brothers as well. But go ahead, Shona.
Like Callum always said, you know, like, what did she sound like? You know, like, they can't remember her voice. You know, Callum always says, like, I can't even remember what she looks like because we were that young. But also because it was so traumatic. We just went into complete shock and our brains had just blocked out, you know, some of the moments. You know, like, I remember that traumatic week, but afterwards, I don't. And the boys have just blocked it out completely.
Do you remember her voice?
I do, yeah. And her laugh.
So coming to the aftermath now, Shona, and I know this is a big thing for you and for the whole family, that there has been a change of policy now at the Bon Secours Hospital.
Yes, so this is the greatest gain, you know, that we've gotten. So our legal process has been going on just under 8 years. So it's definitely been dragged out, not by us, but we've been dragged through the mill with it. But the greatest gain is that the Bon Secours Hospital has changed their policy. So they have vouched that, you know, never again will a patient be refused admission when a consultant is unavailable. So they now have policies in place that if a consultant is unavailable, another consultant is available to admit a patient, and if that's not viable, then there's actually a new assessment unit in the hospital that the junior doctor can refer the patient to.
Well, I'm sure you'd encourage, Shona, all hospitals to look at this case, to look at what happened to your mum and assess their policies.
Oh, completely. We had a serious incident report completed by the Bon Secours. We're dealing with one private hospital here and one public hospital here. And it's slightly easier for a private hospital to change their policy. But, of course, we'd encourage every hospital, you know, to look at their policies and to see if it's viable and to change it. You know, we know for a fact that in the Bon Secours, the change in policy, it's most definitely saved someone. Mm. Of course it has. You know, and that's enough for us, but it has to be across the board.
There's another issue as well. I know you want to raise awareness too of the possible risks of deep vein thrombosis, the warning signs that people need to look out for.
Yeah, so, I mean, with any operation, there's an increased risk of DVT, and it's not a common, but it's a recognised complication for varicose veins. And I suppose the earlier any medical issue is identified, you know, the better the outcome, because the quicker someone gets help, the sooner it can kind of be looked after. So I suppose being aware of the signs and symptoms, you know, being ill, you know, temperature and swelling and pain, but also speaking up, you know yourself if you're not well. Mm-hmm. And I suppose making that phone call as early as possible, you know, and saying something with a mark here and going in to get help.
Well, Shona, we requested statements from the two hospitals in relation to this. We asked the Bon Secours Hospital, among other things, for confirmation that the new policy, which I know is so important to your family, is in place. And a spokesperson for the Bon Secours Hospital sent us a copy of the deposition which was given to the inquest. And in the deposition, the hospital manager offered sincere apologies and deepest sympathy to the families, saying the staff of the hospital are very traumatised and deeply regret the death of the late Mrs. McCabe. Since April 2015, we've implemented a new hospital SMS system to allow nurses to text consultants from their workstations. I went about engaging, says the hospital manager, with all consultants to put the formal cover arrangements in place, and under the new arrangements there will always be a consultant available. That deposition also mentioned other aspects of the new policy, and the spokesperson confirmed that it remains in place. Shona, thank you so much for talking to us, and it's a great tribute to your mum that she's raised such a strong and powerful young woman who is advocating not just on her own behalf, but also on behalf of all of the other people who may go through something like this or may have experiences similar to this one. Thank you so much for talking to us, and we wish you and all the family well.
Thank you so much, Claire.
Now, we've received a response from a spokesperson for Beaumont Hospital in relation to the death of Shona McCabe's mother, Karen. And if you were listening to the last hour, we had a lengthy interview with Shona. We're still getting so many messages complimenting Shona for her strength and her advocacy. Now, the statement outlines how the state claims agency takes over responsibility for managing and resolving a claim against a state authority, in this case, Beaumont Hospital, and that this agency seeks to manage and resolve appropriate cases as quickly as possible. Shona described, if you were listening earlier, going through that legal process for 8 years. And on that point, Beaumont says the requirement to have a commercial insurer was a contributory factor in the delay in mediating in this case. Also, they say as a result of COVID, there were delays in obtaining expert reports. They say Beaumont Hospital fully engaged with the state claims agency and remains open to a meeting with the family to discuss aspects of the care.